Good morning, everybody, here from Finland in the Temple of Silence. And it is silent right now, except for my voice. We are continuing with our Dissipation of Glamour initiative, and we are working on the technique of the presence. Glamour and illusion are really inseparable, and certainly for people of our type who study the Tibetans' teaching, some degree of mental focus is certainly required, and hence we will have the illusion-making tendency. As D.K. says here, just a little review, illusion is frequently misinterpreted and misapplied mental perception of truth. This is an important paragraph, and there's something about the capacity of the mind, the concrete mind, to misinterpret that which has been presented by the higher powers, by the soul, etc., which keeps the thinking part of humanity thinking incorrectly, interpreting incorrectly, not seeing the picture whole, and so forth. This is illusion, and the Tibetan has given, I think, 7 different ways that illusion operates, and we will be studying those as we go along. This technique of the presence that we're working on here has several concerns. I'm just repeating them for the sake of a little review. It has a concern with the process of revelation, with the fact of the presence. Now, the presence is really the monad, but it is the monad within the egoic body, informing what we call the jewel in the lotus. There is the influence of the angel. Well, there are several influences here. There is an aspect of the solar angel, which is invested in the egoic lotus. The entirety of the solar angel is not, but as I've often said, you know, the old Indian from India statement, having pervaded the entire universe with a fragment of myself, I remain. So a certain aspect of the solar angel, which is fully conscious, is within the egoic lotus, and sometimes this is called the angel of the presence, and especially when it combines with the influence of the monad, but it has to reveal the monad. And in the story of the Blessed Ones in Esoteric Psychology, Volume 2, especially under the fifth ray technique, we have some important hints about the revealing of the monad. The technique of the presence concerns also the reaction of the intuitives throughout the world. And, you know, they are presenting the next phase of truth, and we have to learn to move from manas to buddhi so that we are examples of buddhi manas. And it concerns as well the response of the thinking world to the presented truth. There are untrue interpretations of the revealed truth. That is the problem, and it contributes to the general misinterpretation of that which is registered. And then thought forms are built on this misinterpretation, and desires are attached to it. And before you know it, we have glamour with a myopic kind of a mess in the attempt to express the misinterpretation. So work with intuitive apprehension is very necessary to us, so that we do not recognize illusion as the truth, as reality, so that we do grasp the significance of the veiled and symbolically presented revelation. And so we do not confuse it so that we do not allow confusion to enter and misinterpretation. And so we avoid all the distortions and all of the twisted doctrines that have led humanity astray for so long. I mean, you know, I think it's fairly easy for people of our nature to detect at least what we consider to be the metaphysical errors in the thoughts of many who imagine they know what the inner worlds are all about, and they imagine a very simple definition of God and a very simple definition of heaven and hell and all of these concretions, which we recognize as retained illusions which misguide and mislead. It's a long time, though, before humanity as a whole is ready to see through the power of illusion, because so many people are just reaching out of the Atlantean phase into the phase of thinking, where they're going to be creating the thought forms subject to partial views, fragmentation, misinterpretation. So we have to reach the intelligentsia who can do the thought form making process very well and expand and defragment, so to speak, their view of the world. You know, on our computer we have the defragmenters, and I think that people of our type, you know, not to exalt what we know, because we know so little, but people of our type can help others defragment their mental consciousness so that the unity really is perceived as an underlying factor amidst all the apparent difference which the senses present to us. So just so that will take us to what we're going to be discussing today, basically that illusion dispels, intuition dispels individual illusion. You know, when we're dealing with intuition, some of it, of course, makes its way into the egoic lotus through the through various of the petals and works out through the interior group of Buddhic petals, the formation of which comes from the Buddhic plane, the so-called synthesis petals, and on into the second petal configuration of the sacrifice petals and through the love petals and so forth. But the real origin of it, the immediate origin of it, the proximate origin of it, is the intuitional plane, excuse me, and especially the fourth sublevel of the intuitional plane. And then, of course, we cannot say that what we call intuition is missing from the monadic plane or from the cosmic astral plane above. If anything, it's more intense there. Maybe we call it by other names, but it is an immediate apprehension of the truth without the convolutions of the often incorrect reasoning process. Okay, now, what I'd like to do, just for a moment here, I'll be right back. I'd like us to have just a little alignment. By the way, I want to remind about the full moon coming up. I'll try to remind again, but on the early morning of the 11th, tomorrow morning early, GMT time at little after midnight, 12:32:48, we do have the full moon in Aquarius, and just a little earlier than that, an hour and a half earlier, Tuya begins her presentation of the exact moment full moon service meditation. That would be at 11 o'clock p.m. GMT. So, hope you can join us if you don't have other things that you are committed to do on behalf of the full moon, but I hope you are definitely committed to the exact moment full moon process, because as DK tells us, a door opens at that time. He says it is as if a door opens at that time and energies and streams of consciousness are made available at that time as never before in the month. So it is a great advantage, and it helps us build our causal body, our egoic lotus, with the qualities of the sign in power. And heavens, we all need this Uranian ability. So anyway, let's just concentrate for a moment together, as if we reach out to each other in the state of the soul. We're largely in a triangle of Europe and the Americas and Canada, and then Australia, New Zealand, but other places too, of course, do join us, and we're very happy about that. And we are a subjective working group working on improving our character and being rid of the distortions and the wrong desires and the wrong interpretations, which compromise the quality of our consciousness. We do that individually. But we are also working together to help recondition the inner subjective atmosphere of the planet so that through the etheric body of triangles, increasing number of triangles, the truer view of reality can descend into our everyday world and reframe our understanding of that and help people go after worthy goals and help people understand the nature of things in a less distorted manner. So here we are all tuning in with each other, and one can feel the presence of each other. We attempt to be soul-infused personalities. That's the way to work with the illumined mind. And behind it all, we are units of consciousness, units of being consciousness. Easy to talk about, but to live that way is another thing. And we're going to work together in understanding and in the dissipation. We're still working on the very prevalent glamour of egoism or egotism, which arises from the great mistake due to the great heresy of separateness, the one great heresy, the one great misinterpretation. You might call it the seed of so many illusions. So we're working on that. We worked on the glamour of hatred, the glamour of separateness, but as long as we are the victim of separative consciousness, and as long as we see what we call ourselves as separate and independent of the real unity which underlies all things, then we are victims of the great heresy of separateness, and we will be subject to an overestimation of the lower self, which and concentration upon it, and we will call that egotism. So we have to learn, says the Tibetan, to take our eyes off the little personal self. Easily said. And years to accomplish. Or just sound an om affirming our cooperation with each other in this field of consciousness. Good. Well, one can feel the coherence of the group and the presence of the group. When we have a group working this way, we can do some good. So let's continue reading about the technique of the presence, and before long we'll be looking at a kind of meditation which involves this technique of the presence. But mainly, you know, of course, the problem is in the field of glamour, and we do work with the technique of light. But so, for our deeper understanding behind this ability to work with the technique of light is the factor of the presence, which we essentially are, and which the angel of the presence has to reveal to us. Perhaps, you know, on the mountaintop of initiation, under the sublime light of Venus, at the third degree, this presence will become a reality, an increasingly intense reality to us. Matter of fact, I just wanted to read a little bit, you know, from this marvelous Blessed One section in Esoteric Psychology, Volume 2. You know, it's all about how the Blessed One is the extension of the monad. We're all that. We are the monad and we are the extension of the monad. So we are, the Blessed One is really, what can I say, the monad on a pilgrimage in the five lower worlds, away from its home, apparently away from its home on the second subplane. From another perspective, the Blessed One is the monad itself, which which has stayed at home. There's the brother who stayed at home and the brother who went forth, and we are both of them. So the Blessed One came forth in ignorance. This is a long time ago. These are the fifth ray monads. And there are such, you know, they do exist. He tells us that the path of magnetic work on the way of higher evolution is fifth ray people or fifth ray monads frequently take this path. What an interesting idea that there are seven types of monads as well as three types of major monads into which the seven resolve eventually. He wandered in a darkness deep of spirit. He saw no reason for this way of life. He sought among the many threads that weave the outer garment of the Lord. You know, the scientific approach, caught often in externals, interesting externals, and found the many ways there be that lead to the center of the web eternal. The forms that weave that web hide the divine reality. He lost himself. Fear entered in. So now the idea of return. It takes ages, of course, but the monad goes forth in extension and the monad returns. The pilgrim goes forth, the pilgrim returns. He asked himself, another pattern must be woven, another garment formed. What shall I do? Shew me another way to weave. There we have, interestingly, a word that is frequently associated with the weaver on the third ray, but these two rays are very close together, so we're talking about discriminating between the many threads that weave the outer garment of the Lord. Anyway, in order to help him return, the word for him came forth in triple form. His mind responded to the vision clear evoked. And then these words, which I think we could ponder for the rest of our lives. The truth lies hidden in the unknown way. The angel of the presence guards that way. The mind reveals the angel and the door. Stand in that presence. Lift up thine eyes. Enter through the golden door. Thus will the angel, who is the shadow of the Blessed One. In that case, the Blessed One is the monad. Thus will the angel, who is the shadow of the Blessed One, reveal the open door. That angel, too, must disappear. The Blessed One remains and passes through that door into the light sublime. So I do recommend, you know, you go to page 38 here, 37, 38, of Esoteric Psychology, Volume 2. All these Blessed One stanzas are extraordinary, and I've made interpretations of them, which you can find on Makara. I've gone through each one, you know, to try to discuss what it means for the monad of that type to be the Blessed One and the returning Blessed One. But I found the fifth ray formula for the Blessed One extremely revelatory regarding the solar angel. The solar angel, you know, is a sort of generically a second ray, fifth ray being. And it does, in a way, introduce the immersed monad to its source, the actual monad on the higher plane. That's what it means to go through that golden door. And, of course, the presence of the solar angel and the monad's work on the higher mental plane, especially on the second and third subplane, does disappear when the causal body is destroyed at the fourth initiation, even though the monad keeps the triad and the point on the highest level of the mental plane, the first subplane, which is the lowest point of the triad. So after the great conflagration, or however you imagine your causal body to be destroyed, there are seven different ways to do it, and if you want to find out how it is done, just go into Letters on Occult Meditation, the first few pages around page 15, 16, 17 in there. You get your choice of how you want your causal body destroyed, you know, the egoic egg, scrambled, sunny side up, whatever you like, and according to your ray. And then when all of that is dissipated, the Blessed One, who is the extension of the monad, rises into the spiritual triad and eventually returns to the higher Blessed One, the monad itself. And, you know, when we're speaking about the presence, the technique of the presence, what is the presence? Are we the presence? How do we become fully cognizant of our source, which is the great presence underlying all things? This particular stanza is really, really good. Okay. Today we have reached a crisis in the field of human apprehension and can now enter into a new era wherein illusion can be dispelled. Notice the words, the dispelling of illusion, the dissipation of glamour, and the dispersion of Maya. Where illusion can be dispelled and thinkers can begin to register accurately and without misapprehension that which the intuitives convey to them. Okay, so, you know, in the world scriptures, there are all these intuitive registrations, and people with a concrete mind come along, concretize everything, and don't see the revelation for what it is. So if we learn how to register accurately and do not grasp in the wrong way what comes from the higher worlds, even from our own intuition, we will be rid of the first phase of illusion. So thus will we be rid of the first phase of illusion. There are many phases, and the whole universe is the Mahamaya. The whole universe is an illusion in a sense. So that's philosophically interesting, but of course not of great use to us when we talk about the common mistakes in interpretation and thought which we make, and in which are known as illusion, and we can do something about it. This statement about registering accurately and so forth does not yet apply to the general public. It will be a long time before they respond without illusion, because illusion is based on the thought form building activity of the lower mind, and excuse me, let's see if I don't want to lose that. So now we begin to know, we can see why in the Yoga Sutras, the mind, the lower mind, must be stilled so that the higher worlds can be reflected without fragmentation and distortion. That's how we see things. Everything's split up, things unto themselves, as if they have what the Buddhists would call own being, O-W-N, but they don't. Nothing has own being. Everything is an extension of one being. So everything has to be put back together and not split up in order for us to see things as they are. So the general public will not respond yet. It will not be capable of dissipating illusion, because they're just getting into the business of using the lower mind more actively. And that's wonderful, and it also causes its complications. The masters are just beginning to use the lower mind, you know, emerging from the mass consciousness in Cancer and then entering Leo, which is the fifth sign and thus correlated with the fifth principle, the mind. And illusion is therefore for them a necessary stage of testing and training, and one through which they must pass, or they will lose much valuable experience, leaving undeveloped the powers of discrimination, you know, the ability to tell the difference between things. So, you know, the people, they simply must go through this phase, and we have to be ourselves discriminating as to who is at the stage who can be helped to see through what the lower mind has created of fragmentation and misapprehension. When you come to a person who's just learning to use that, well, sufficient unto the task is their effort. They have to go through that, and the person who has gone through that has to be discriminating and allow them to go through it and not burden them with excessive the attempt to describe higher states for which they are not ready. So the power of discrimination, we need discrimination too. For us, it's not just so much telling one thing from another. It's telling the soul from the personality. That's where the siddhi, the power of discrimination, is found for students of the ageless wisdom, such as we hope to be. So this is a point which all teachers of the occultism, should have in mind. It is essential, consequently, that the masses, under the sign Cancer, you know, the emotional and physical nature, are taught the significance of illusion and be trained to see and choose the kernel of pure truth. Now, in A Treatise on White Magic, there are 15 counsels, and I think the second one is view the world of illusion and in its midst locate the golden thread of truth. The beginning can be made so that we do not wander in illusion lost. We can instruct in the beginnings phases of this. The significance of illusion, and train to see and choose the kernel of pure truth in any presentation of truth with which they are confronted. Now, it takes a long time to do this, but the minds of the people do have to be trained, and the third ray and the fifth ray are very useful in doing that. Going on, it is essential, likewise, that the world intuitives learn to use and control and understand the faculty of spiritual perception. Now, this is, one of those faculties that is appearing with greater strength at the third initiation or approaching that, of divine isolation. Reminds one of isolated unity, where we do isolate the unity that ever is and is so often missed, and appropriate response which characterizes the intuition. So the intuitives have somewhat to learn here to use and control and understand the faculty of spiritual perception, of divine isolation, and appropriate response which characterizes the intuition. Everybody has their own curriculum. The planetary logos does too, the solar logos does, and on, and we at our own phase and all the different phases of human development, each has its own appropriate curriculum, and the idea is to stick to it and learn from it. You know, at the Moria Federation, we have taken the curriculum which Master DK presented for the preparatory schools of meditation, which will appear in the future and are now beginning to appear. And we've tried to make sense out of as much of that curriculum as may be available to us. We work where we are according to the proper study of our level of consciousness. Anyway, these intuitives work with the technique of the presence, so they can learn to control spiritual perception. They can learn divine isolation, they can learn appropriate response, and they do it through the practice of the technique of the presence, but not as it is usually taught and presented. Perhaps I shall make my meaning clear if I state that this technique falls into certain scientific lines or modes of work. The DK is always emphasizing the inner science, right? It may be subtle, and it may not be objective, but it is scientific. It is subtle, non-objective, and for all of that, no less scientific. So it falls into certain scientific lines or modes of work, for which much of the training given in the schools of true meditation and in Raja Yoga systems have prepared the aspirant. Now, Raja Yoga is not easy approach. If you've read the Kingly Science of the Soul, the Yoga Sutras of Patanjali, maybe you remember the Tibetan saying that even the masters study the third and fourth book, the two last books. So if we're talking about Raja Yoga preparing us for true intuitive living, it's quite arduous. So are we prepared? Well, probably not entirely, but we're in process. These stages begin where the usual formulas leave off and presuppose, and presuppose facility in approach to the angel or the soul and an ability to raise the consciousness to the point of soul fusion. Well, you know, we have to study in esoteric psychology, too, the ability to do this. If we're going to understand the technique of the presence, none of us is totally soul-infused. It's my impression that by the time we reach the fourth initiation and are ready for the destruction of the causal vehicle, the full measure of soul infusion in the personality has occurred. So we're not there yet. But this point of soul fusion does not have to be complete. So he's going to list the the processes or stages which relate to this technique. And he says, the evocation of the stage of tension. Now, we're reminded of the Antikorana building, right? This is basic and essential. It is tension brought about by complete control of the personal self so that it is fitted for contact with the real. In other words, no leaks. Most of us are only, 65%, something like that, tense. We have all these points of extension. Thereby much needed energy for propelling the consciousness into higher realms is missing. So we have to learn really control. Control is conservation of a necessary propelling energy. Okay, so we achieve the state of tension, and achieving a state of fusion, it's gradual, with the soul or with the angel which guards the approach to the path of higher evolution. Well, you know, that's the work of the solar angel as the angel of the presence. This is the work of the solar angel as the angel of the presence. We cannot be exposed to the full radiation of the presence, that which we essentially are, prematurely, because the forms that we have built would be destroyed, and we'd have to spend a lot of rehabilitative, reparative work over a number of incarnations. So the angel of the presence, the extension of the solar angel, has this deep mathematical knowledge of when things are right for further exposure. The masters have this also. I remember them debating with a certain disciple, do we widen the channel now and let in more energy, or do we retain the present situation? And they decided that that disciple was sufficiently sensitive not to widen the channel, because that would have caused further disturbance. Okay, and what else is necessary? The holding of the mind, and this is pretty much the concrete mind, steady, not just now and then, but steady in the light of the soul, which remains the attitude of the lower self for the entire remaining period of work, held at the point of tension by the soul and not by the effort of the personality. Now, that's quite interesting, because we have to identify as the soul, as an active agent here of something still higher, and the soul is doing the work. The soul undertakes this holding when the personal self has done its utmost to achieve the desired tension. So we must work very hard if we're going to turn over the process to our inner superior, which is the soul. And then, and only then, you know, this is like the 11th hour. You do everything up to the 11th hour, and then the redemption or the salvation or that which we cannot do comes in after the 11th hour. So we don't ever imagine that the soul or higher agencies are going to do all this for us. These are the three preliminary steps for the practice of alignment, for which the practice of alignment should have prepared the student of the higher mysteries. These steps must precede all effort to develop the intuition. That's what we're talking about here, isn't it? You know, the work of the Antikorana and this kind of work that is being discussed in relation to the technique of the presence, this is all about developing the intuition. This is our next frontier, so that we may be true representatives of Buddhimanus. And this, maybe he's being optimistic, I don't know. This may take several months or even years of careful preparation. I think most of us You know, we've been meditating for a while. Maybe we don't meditate carefully enough, stage by stage, step by step. DK tells us to give particular attention to the steps in the early building process. So it may take several months, even years of careful preparation. Fire is the symbol of the mind, and these are the first three stages, fantastic, of the Agni Yoga discipline, or the yoga of fire, for which Raja Yoga has prepared the student. You know, right there, we can stop. This is a fantastic statement. DK has given a little bit on Agni Yoga from the second ray perspective. The Master Maurya, more from the perspective of the will, has presented his take on the Agni Yoga. But these three phases are entering into the Agni Yoga. Now, Agni Yoga is characterized by straight knowledge. So immediate apprehension, and it transcends the ordinary, the reasoning power. So we're going to, continue with this as we continue to work. Now, in our new schedule, Atuya has prepared a schedule for the ASK program, and it includes also some of the webinars we're doing, and we're going to be doing some new webinars on the triangles work, which is so vitally important, but they will be partially academic webinars, like this webinar on glamour, dissipation of, is partially academic. Sometimes it'll just have to be the meditation itself, but sometimes we can talk about that great book, Glamour World Problem, and then the same is available for the for our work that I've just been talking about. You know, having a senior moment here. Yes, triangles. Sorry. The triangles work. We will discuss that from the esoteric astrological perspective. DK gives us about 100 pages there in the book Esoteric Astrology, and we'll go over that quite carefully, as well as, of course, do the usual glamour meditation, and and we will continue with the very practical work of triangles. We'll continue with the practical work of triangles every Wednesday, but every once in a while there'll be additional work from an academic perspective. So I don't want to do too much here. I've already talked for quite a while. I want you to have a chance to give your response. So this is going to be the end of Dissipation of Glamour Initiative, the readings of number 33. And our day here today is the 10th of February, 2017. And let's see, whatever page we're on here. I think I put this in the wrong place. Yeah, I have. I have put this in the wrong place. I've got to go to the very end where we were. Yeah, right here. Okay. I don't want to get confused, as it's so easy to do. So we will work at the beginning of these readings again next week, I guess on the 17th, I guess. Anyway, next Friday. And it'll be the number 34. And I think, let's check my calendar so that I'm not making a mistake. Yeah, it's the 17th of February and on the year 2017. Well, there's a lot to think about here. We're going to get into this technique in detail, and basically we're going to see what developing the intuition can bring to us. It is a scientific method of developing the intuition, and not simply waiting for what is called the astral Buddhic leap, or at least I call it the astral Buddhic leap, the ability to kind of go from an intense state of aspiration into a state of intuition, intuitive response. That's good, but it's a little bit happenstantial, and it's not under the control of the mind and the will, and we want to know how to access the intuition directly through the mind and the will, and according to the scientific occult technique that Master DK has given to us. Okay, friends, so let's, if you have some thoughts, any questions, any statements, etc., this will be the time to put them forward. You can put them forward as a statement or question. Brett will let me know about it. You can raise your hand. I will respond. Or if you're on the staff and backing us up with BL, Joe, Brett, and Tuya, then you can just talk when you want to. Try to find the right place to interject your thought. So I'm waiting for any response or question that you might have on this subject. What we are pursuing now, or the subject of glamour and illusion in general. Meanwhile, while I'm waiting, you know, the different stages, I'm going to put them in bold type. The angel, and then finally, the holding of the mind steady in the light. If we could only do that, just in our meditation, really hold the mind steady in the light, which means, of course, contacting the light somehow. We've got to be able to do that and know we're doing it. Okay, any thoughts, any questions? I'll try to be alert to those, and if I'm not alert, then one of our staff members will help me be alert. Okay. So here is a person. No, that's you, Livia. All right. I thought I read the word Chris. Okay. All right, go ahead, Livia. Go ahead. Yeah.
You know, I think that when we see all the struggle that the public is having with what is a fact, what isn't a fact, all the things that are going on with public statements that are untrue to different degrees. And so it can be frustrating. And yet, I think that this idea that this is a stage that a lot of people need to go through to develop the discernment, it really brings us then into this idea of having more patience and understanding that, it really is a process going through. We have much more compassion, and then we also work harder to bring in the light and help people see.
Mm-hmm. It's a good point. You know, it's the factor of discrimination, isn't it? You brought it up, and, here on the fourth subplane of the mental plane is the place where that kind of discrimination is worked out. And even, let's just call the factual plane of the mental plane is the fifth subplane of the mental plane, and a lot of people are rising out of the kama manas of the sixth subplane up to the factuality and accuracy of the fifth subplane. In other words, if we talk about alternative facts, if we talk about facts as we wish them to be, then we are being run by the desire body, and truth doesn't make that much difference to us. So there's a lot of work being done in the transferring out here of kama manas on the sixth subplane into true manas and factuality, and eventually arising into the ability to discriminate between soul values and personality values. Now, right now, we see an incredible display of personality values being put forward as if they were the most important things in the world. And the larger picture is being lost. This is, you might say, almost an inevitable reaction. Whenever you're trying to transfer energy from a lower center to a higher, there's always going to be a fallback period and then a reassertion of the higher possibilities. So just as long as it doesn't go too far, people who have achieved the higher state do have to step in and guide the process and help people really discriminate between what is and what they wish were the case, and thus divorce the mind, temporarily at least, from the Kama monastic response, divorce the mind from the astral response. This is a necessary stage, and many people are going through it, and hopefully it will not be too disastrous. Hopefully it will achieve the goal. Yeah,
right.
It's happening. Mm-hmm. It's happening, and all around, and it's not just limited to the United States. You know, there's this. It's a worldwide movement.
Everywhere.
Yeah, Europe is under the same kind of retrogressive pressure. I guess I would call it that. I don't know so much about China. It's more a controlled state, but I think this is sweeping through human consciousness at this time, in preparation for establishing what really is true, what really is a fact. It can't just be as we wish, you know, and that just shows you the wish life of humanity and how powerful it is. So those of us who think we know something about the facts have really got to hold the mind steady in the light and try inwardly to guide the process. Yeah, we'll do our best. We'll do our best persistently. Thank you for those thoughts. Thank you. Now let's see.
We have a written comment from Debo.
Yes. Okay. And here's Debo. He's saying the good news is that the heart of man is sound. Yes, he does say that, doesn't he, Debo? And then he adds to it the qualifier: the heart of man is sound if oft asleep. So, you know, waking up the heart of man, and I think, we all know from our own personal experience, incarnational experience, that it is so often suffering which wakes up the heart of man, especially in this fourth ray kingdom, you know, where we're struggling between the pairs of opposites. And on the second ray, as he describes it, agonizing towards the goal. So, you know, the technique of applied suffering is part of the awakening process, part of the purification process. What's it called? Releasing pain and purifying pain and releasing sorrow. That's what he calls it. And that's not a pleasant thing to contemplate, but I think it's very effective. And it has to do with the retardation that we have all undergone in our planetary process in earlier times. We are being awakened for better or for worse. And we will feel the excruciating pain of that awakening and then the joy and the bliss of it. But we just have to be ready to have the veils kind of, you know, stripped away. And if we're holding on to them for dear life, then it's going to be a painful process. If we are attached, pain and attachment definitely go together. But, you know, you're right. We have to hold that image, and it's true, of all the people, even the misguided ones, and certainly we are among those and have been among those. We hold the image. The heart of man is sound. It's a wonderful mantra. And we can repeat that when we see things going on that we wonder how we can stand it when we see these things, but we remind ourselves the heart of man is sound. Okay. Thank you for offering that important thought. Anything else, Brett? Anything?
Not at the moment.
Okay. Well, you know, this work on the presence, this is not easy work. I read it and think about it, you know, I say, well, what does he mean? What does he mean? You know, because these are factors which are beyond our normal experience, and yet we're expected to register them as realities increasingly as we purify ourselves and remain open to the inflow of those energies which create soul infusion. We're expected to register this infusion. as if it were a reality. In fact, it's a higher reality. So, you know, we have our work cut out for us. We cannot go along with our normal, dull consciousness, you know. you want to outgrow that kind of thing. And sometimes it's not easy to do. But the only way we're going to be of any help is to work towards developing the exquisite consciousness that the masters possess so that they can help us. So it is, you know, you have to, what does he say? You have to shake the man plant so that all the clogs and the clumps of dirt, you know, they just fall down and we're no longer attached to the soil in that way. But we have a cleansing process. First it might be shaking, then it's water, then it's fire, you know. We're going to go through all of this, and of course we're in process right now. Any other thoughts before we work on our meditation together? Okay, Rebecca, I see your hand. Okay, Rebecca, please.
Okay. Michael, can you hear me?
Yes, very well, as a matter of fact. Go ahead, Rebecca.
This is the first time I've spoken.
No, you're good. You're loud and clear. You're good. Okay. Good for you.
Okay. Is there a relationship with the technique of the presence and being present? Those two words, being present, coming into present moment, is there a relationship with that and the technique of the presence?
I think so. I think the two words are too closely related to just be coincidental. You know, in the fourth ray technique of integration, it ends with this interesting statement. It says, "The hour is now." And you know, and then recently there's been that book by Eckhart Tolle and The Power of Now. You know, it's not thinking back to what happened. It's not looking forward in terms of the past to what may happen. It's a vital participation in being in the moment. So the presence and being are terms that are congruent in certain way. And, you know, I'm reminded of Richard Alpert's, was it Baba Ram Dass's book, Be Here Now. So it is the eternal now, which is so elusive, but is a Buddhic factor, which makes us feel present in the present. I sometimes use the statement present in the presence. You know, it snaps something for me so that I don't get pulled off or distracted by any fragment of my perception. But when I try to be present in the presence begins to appear. And I'm offering a condition to the solar angel so that that angel can introduce me as a fragment, as the projection of the monad, reintroduce me to the source. Everything becomes still in the presence because I'm not allowing myself to be pulled off into what we call the past and the future. And that means I can begin to merge with being, which is of the nature of the presence. So, you know, one could meditate on your question, but I think the general response that I have is yes. For people who are really present, the presence which underlies all things and is visible through what I call the act of infusception. You know, infusception is like you sense the fusion of all things in being. These two, it prepares us for a more reasonable, impactful relationship with this great fact of being which we are. So how do we learn to be present? And of course, part of it is simply being still, and part of it is beginning to sense that there is, you know, in the words of the poet, something far more deeply interfused. So when we're present, we're in the moment, we're in the eternal now, which is not easy, of course, and we begin to sense that something far more deeply interfused, and it turns out to be the presence itself, pure being, the monad, and the stillness of being present helps with that process. So my general sense is, yes, those two things are together, but to figure out what it means to you, or any one of us to figure out, we have to meditate on that and, you know, just go deep with those two words and what it means to us, and then it'll become applicable in our own particular case. Thank you.
Thank you,
Rebecca, for...
Nice to talk to you for the first time.
speaking up, thanks for speaking up. I appreciate your presence. Okay.
Yes.
Very good.
Thanks.
Appreciate the presence of all of you, actually, of course. Okay, anything further that you wish to say before we get into our meditation here? Okay. Okay, well, you know, there's lots to think about, lots to brood upon. It's the second ray method, you know, to brood. You just sit on the ideas and the thoughts until they begin to hatch and they become more alive and they're connected with each other. You know, as DK said in a great second ray statement, ponder on this. And then we have to learn how to really ponder, keep our attention, the warmth of our attention on the thought under consideration, and it will begin to hatch, and the higher energies will come in with their heat, as it were, and provide the circumstances for the blossoming into reality. I'm mixing too many metaphors, but the coming into reality of that which was simply a thought, it will become linked up with the idea which produced the thought. We need to enter into the world of ideas that's found minimally on the Buddhic plane. And this world of ideas is the very beginning of intuitive apprehension. We get a little bit of a watering down of it coming through the egoic lotus, but it's not the pure intuition, which is a type of perception, which is found in the mind of our planetary logos. It is called transcendental mind, and it is a way of perceiving that is a characteristic of the transfigured individual. We need to work our way into that and see, not just as we personally would see, but see as God sees, so to speak, as the planetary logos and all the higher agencies on our planet. We need to begin to see from that perspective. And when we build the Antikorana and enter into the triad, and as those higher vehicles begin to be coordinated, organized, and so forth, we do indeed begin to see from a perspective which has nothing to do with all we have experienced here as little personalities in the lower three worlds. It's an entirely higher type of perception, and it does relate to the fact that we are spirits, we are monads, and we are inherently part and parcel of the great perceivers on the higher planes. That's our true nature, and we are restored to our triadal and eventually monadic powers of awareness. And then on we go and on we go until all becomes the one again. Okay. So let's have our little meditation. Now, you know, this inclusive view that I've been talking about, where we look at anything and, well, if I can, you know, use that coined word, we look at anything infuseptually, as if there was a great fusion underneath it all. This is a great task and involves realizing that we are not only present, we are the presence itself. Now, you know, what really does that mean to us? We start out by being present in the presence, but in that light we shall see light, and we shall realize that that which is present is the presence itself, which we are. But that's a big job, a long work, to peel away all the obstructive thoughts, the fragments, all of the misinterpretations, all of the busyness, peel it all the way till what's left, you know, is what we are. What's left is what we are. The presence which has ever been throughout every universe. Well, those are the high philosophical thoughts, but we have to make them realities in the way we perceive life, and it's so easy to get distracted and pulled off and thrown back into the mundane world, which has to be dealt with, and having astral and chamomanasic reactions and all the rest of it. Somehow we have to hold the mind steady in the light of the soul, which is, in a way, the shadow of the Blessed One. So at least let's deal with the shadow of the Blessed One, or maybe from another perspective, we want to call it the reflection of the Blessed One. We have to hold those thoughts steady. Now, maybe, you know, in Aquarius, which is such a universal sign, very inclusive, leaving room for everybody, you know, the coat of many colors, the rainbow, and all the rest, maybe under the influence, the growing influence of that toward the coming full moon, tomorrow morning GMT at 12:32:48, right after midnight, maybe some of that sense of the all-pervasive, inclusive presence can begin to dawn on us more impressively. Anyway, we will persist until we re-become what we always have been. So, we are gathered together, almost 40 of us here, coming and going. And we think of each other as aspects of the one soul. Many are the pairs of eyes which see through, and which represent the vision of the one consciousness. So we are together in this work, that's the point. And then we sound the protective formula, and remember how we do the sign of the cross as we're doing this, you know, the forehead, the chest, the right eye, left eye, right eye. This is the cross he wants us to use. And we immerse ourselves in the light imaginatively, and we do not wander from it. As a soul, I work in light. And darkness cannot touch me. I take my stand within the light. I work, and from that point, I never move. So we are light workers in the light. And that is our protection, because the glamours we seek to dissipate are born of darkness, are born of ignorance. And light will dissipate these glamours. Now, the three preparatory stages. We have several lights we work with. We are aware of the dual light of matter and of mind, and they are both going to be focused on the mental plane, the vitality of the personality and the power of the lower mind. The vibration of matter, the vibration of the lower mind. Light is vibration. So we focus these two lights on the plane of mind within our mental body, thus within the group mental body. Then we meditate for a moment on soul contact. However we want to visualize that or touch that, and we seek to recognize soul light. It's coming from another dimension, and it's very real. And then we fuse, actually or through the imagination, we fuse the two lesser lights with the descending soul light. We bring them into a fusion on the plane of mind. Soul, the light vibration of the lower mind, the light vibration of matter, all coming together, the triple light. And then with the sense of this occurring in the mental body and on the mental plane and in the group mental body, we say together, the light is one. And in that light shall we see light. This is the light that turns the darkness into day. Light of day, the light of the intuition, the light which Scorpio reveals, the triple light will reveal the light of day. And the clouds will be cleared, and we will see in a manner undistorted, and our desires will reflect this clarity and lack of distortion, and we will desire that which is truly of value and not what illusion has revealed. And then we enter the formula and we say together, As a group, we visualize as we speak the great searchlight that we are creating, turning on and turning its light upon the astral plane. The triple light of soul, mind, and matter is a searchlight out upon the astral plane, accompanying the words of the formula. A radiance and power are we. We stand forever with our hands stretched out, linking the heavens and the earth. The inner world of meaning and the subtle world of glamour. The world of the soul is the world of meaning. We reach into the light and bring it down to meet the need. We reach into the silent place and bring from thence the gift of understanding. Thus, with the light we work. And turn the darkness into day. And we invoke now the spiritual will, really from the plane of Atma and beyond, we invoke the spiritual will through willingness and we imagine the spiritual will coming into relation with our triple light as one, our searchlight empowering our beam of light. And we say, with power upon its beam, the light is focused on the goal. And so we imagine our searchlight empowered and the goal, the dissipation of those clouds of glamour which produce in the consciousness of the human being the egotistical response, born of the misperceptual mistake of egoism, mistaken identity. Now we do the work. We'll be visualizing our beam penetrating into this glamour of egotism and producing its weakening and dissipation. And you visualize this as you wish, and then we'll have our period of silence where the inner work proceeds. And so, we have three words of power. and we utter these together, visualizing the empowered beam doing its work, preventing, negating, destroying. Look at those first gray words. The power of our united light prevents the appearance of the glamour of egotism. The power of our united light negates the quality of the glamour from affecting humanity. The power of our united light destroys the life behind the glamour. So with these three words of power in mind, we enter that period of silence and intensity of purpose, and using the creative imagination in our own way and on behalf of the group, we see this work of preventing, negating, and destroying proceeding. We'll work now in silence. and we find a sense of proportion taking place in our estimation of our place within the scheme of things, we see things as they truly are. We see ourselves as we truly are. And there is a meaning here to the fact that the sun falls in the sign Libra, the lower sun of self-admiration and egotism, falls in the sign of proportion, humility, an adjusted sense of right proportion. We are all on the ladder of hierarchy. We are the whole and the part. As the whole, we need do nothing other than be what we are. As the part, we each have a specific circumscribed function, which is precise. No inflation, no minimization. We see what we are as extensions of the One. We see with pure reason the correct relationship or relationships between the little self and all other factors to which it may relate. And thus the Sun of Truth shines, the Sun of True Identity shines, and the lower Sun of Egotism falls. And people in Libra learn right human relations and the golden rule, and they treat each other in the way that Christ would have us treat each other. So we withdraw the beam imaginatively onto the mental plane. Our attention is away from those false desires, away from the longing for the unreal that victimizes so many. And we turn the searchlight off. And together, looking forward to the improvement of the personality to the point where it becomes a transfigured agent of the soul, we have consciously re-become. Together, we sound the Om 3 times. Mental, emotional, physical. And so, friends, we work in the light. In Aquarius, we'll be dealing with the light which shines on Earth across the sea. A universal light which brings the higher ethers into the everyday world. It's a healing energy, cleansing the stables that have long accumulated the residues of three levels of the personality. It's an important time. Keep the impending Aquarian full moon in mind. Make sure you are in meditation at the time of the exact full moon. And we'll be, we've decided that, you know, on the day before, the day of, and the day after the full moon, we will concentrate on that and suspend, under most circumstances, the ask programs. And you should very shortly have received our new schedule for the ask programs, taking us several months forward, and hopefully giving you some time change indications which may be useful to you. You just always have to measure yourself against Greenwich Meridian time, universal time. Move forward once and backward once if you're on daylight saving time. And we'll continue to work in this way. We're not working personally. We're not together as personalities in the same room, but we are working as souls. And you know, if you wonder whether that's possible, think of how Master DK works with us. For most of us, he hasn't walked in the door the way Master KH once did with Alice Bailey. He's working telepathically. He's working in presence with us as souls, and we can work with each other and with humanity from the perspective of the soul and as soul infused personalities. So do join us if you can and wish to for the coming service of meditation, which we begin to offer at 11 o'clock p.m. Tonight, GMT, a couple of hours, and the exact moment of the full moon is on the next day, the 11th, early in the morning, 12:32:48, and just establish your own full moon time in relation to that 12:32:48 a.m. Thank you very much for being here, and we will continue our work together as a unit of soul-infused personalities, infusing in the one soul, in the one consciousness, and in the one being. Thank you, and have an excellent day, evening, night, whatever it is for you, and we'll be with you before long again. Okay, bye-bye.